I'm Michael O'Connell, and I'm an attorney, a managing partner at Rackham & Sawyer & Brewster, and I've represented the foundation from its outset in the fall of 1996, and have represented Burt and Coogee Valley personally since about 1996. Burt and I hit it off, I think, because I was a little bit less stodgy and would, you know, be quite candid, quite, what shall we say, a little bit off color with Burt. And he enjoyed things that were off color in the sense of cracking a joke, whether that be sort of a little bit scatological or otherwise. And so I think we did hit it off. And he looked to me, and I must say, I found a great deal of satisfaction in that and self-confidence, that he would look to me for help and advice. He said to me oftentimes that, Mike, you need three people in your life as you go through life. This was separate from spouse or significant other. But he said, you need a good doctor, and he really felt that he really was in that position. And he really took on that mantle for so many of the people, at least the non-docs, that he was involved with, including myself. He felt it was his obligation to make sure that I was taken care of. So a good doctor, a banker. Burt was always very much interested in, and we've reaped the benefits of it today in the foundation. And a lawyer, he said. And so I'd like to say that for the most part in the last almost 15 years of his life, that I really served in that capacity.
What did you see in Burt at that time?
I was knocked out by and amazed, happily so. When I met Burt, he was, he died at just before 92 in 2010, so we're talking 15, he was probably 76, 77 years old. He was just amazingly energetic. He was not athletic, as far as I could tell, and he had had some real bouts with sickness, the Guillain-Barré disease in the early 80s, and again he got attacked by it in, I believe, the early 2000s. But his physical energy and, of course, his intellectual energy were just, to me, just mind-boggling. And I remember saying this to Peter Campo, who knew him starting in about 1982 or so, and he said, Mike, okay, you know him today. You should have seen him back when. And I said, my goodness, he must have just been, in many ways, a tornado, the way he was. So I was very impressed with his intellectual energy and enthusiasm about what he did. And he wanted, he was a teacher, he really was. And he saw in me a blank slate, really, as far as science was concerned. And so he... I readily agreed because I had been involved at the Brigham for years as a trustee, but also in their venture advisory group where we did a lot of science, and it really it not that I understood it, but it turned me on. And Burt said, "Good, I want to give you a wee bit of an education," which he did. He assigned me books to read. Yes, the textbooks, but he would pick them out, and they were, you know, they were elementary, I'm sure, nonetheless. We would chat, you know, every other week or so, going on for maybe eight months a year. And that was probably the first, second, third year that he and I were together. So he wanted to share his enthusiasm. And he also wanted, and this was, I was clearly not the first, indeed, I might have been the last. He did do the same thing with other businessmen who came across. Burt would take that on. He felt that it was critical that laymen, and at least professional laymen, should know some science. Not a lot. Don't get bogged down in the weeds, but you should know some science because he, again, and he's well known for this, he wanted to translate it into the business world. He wanted to, he knew that business people had to get it a bit to recognize the benefits economic as well as clinical of the science, and he was a really, in the best sense, a salesman for science to the outside community.
You've described beautifully what he was like as a person, this energy that he had, and that he was a great teacher, even when it was in his professional relationships and not in his class. But what was your sense at that time of a perhaps more all-encompassing mission that then influenced what he wanted to do with the foundation?
He had a wonderful idea he wanted to bring scientists together. He wanted that, as he always said, collegiality, but conviviality. He always used that term. He was trying to think of something where he could use, at that time, somewhat limited funds in the foundation. And he fastened on, and I think it was his patent, if you will, on this program of visiting professors, where, as he explained to me, he said, "Mike, these people are all busy. They can't leave their labs for a sabbatical, you know, even no matter what you offered them in money or other benefits, they can't leave their lab. What they would like to do, though, is spend a discrete period of time with other people in their field in other places." And we started at 2 weeks, but we soon got it up to 4 weeks. And I remember one of the first he had in his office was Eddie Fisher. My guess is that he wanted to pass down himself and Kugi, and he recognized that had to be through something like the foundation, and he drove all of his efforts to making sure that there was sufficient money there through his wonderful advisor David Ogden. I never saw Bert think about death. Let me say that. He was just almost felt, and you felt in his presence that he was not going to defy it so much, or not experience it. But it never seemed to cross his mind. He wanted to keep active, and I think he wanted to keep active because he wanted to make sure, damn sure, that this thing was carried on by his friends. And oftentimes he would, ask me, "Mike, how can we make this so that can't be changed?" Can't be changed. I said, "Bert, there's no way, really. Even if you said that, you can have things reformed by a court. You know, if you have a purpose for impoverished spinsters, and when there are no more spinsters around, you have to have that reformed." And so he thought about this quite a bit. Who should govern it? How it should be governed? And of course, he was very mercurial about that. I mean, people would be in and out of what we all called his doghouse. All the time, and the people who were with him fairly often in those years, there was at least two of us always in the doghouse.
Can I ask you, do you think he made peace with the idea that it would change? Did you see him say, "Oh, well, that's going to happen, I understand," or did he say, "No, I want it to stay like this, the foundation, right to the end"?
Yeah. I think he recognized it had to change because he changed his mind. I can remember one time in particular, he had said, "Here's what I want, Mike. I want A, B, C, and D to be the directors." Now, of course, Bert could do that because he was the only member of the foundation during his life. So he could hire and fire, if you will. And therefore, there was little governance other than what Bert wanted but he said, "I want you to file papers that A, B, C, and D would be there." And they were great people, good friends. About 2 months later, he was talking, and I said, "Well, Bert, A, B, C, and D are now also directors, And he said, "What? What are you talking about?" And so I had to go up and, in effect, rescind that. I mean, that's the type of thing. But I think he was mercurial in the sense of his moods, but he was not mercurial in the sense of lasting loyalty, I guess. Mm. I think he came back to the people whom he felt, whom he saw had some of his principles or all of his principles together. The wonderful thing about Bert is that he was a relatively small man in stature. He'd come right up to you and speak it right into your nose, and he wouldn't blink an eye.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way he was. And
so you knew where you stood with Bert.
You damn well knew where you stood.